The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's happening, guys? Happy Tuesday! And thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. I hope you all had a happy Easter Sunday. I hope you spent some time with your family. I know that I did. Guys, coming up on today's show, Sean Strickland is in no man's land. And I'm going to tell you what I think will happen with our former champion and my friend. Plus, Ronda Rousey is coming out with a new book. She's spilling all the details about why the UFC career came to an end. And I got some questions about this. We have a lot to get to, everybody. But I want to begin with this. What do you guys make of Weidman's fight? It was so interesting. I haven't seen him look that good in years, by the way. I mean, of his last five fights, I thought he looked his best in this one. And by the way, the last five fights, I don't care about the outcome. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about how he looked and how he presented himself and how he performed. I thought he looked good in those five fights prior, regardless of outcome. He's looked better in this one. I just don't know how we got there. How do you come off of an injury which slows you down? You're not at the gym. You can't practice. I mean, it's one of these things. And even when you get back, you have the psychological effects. How do you do something like that? I would think that there would be immense amounts of pressure on Chris as well. His fight's in Atlantic City, right? I mean, he's a hometowner from New York, but he was put there because it's close to his hometown. It was also supposed to be and billed as his retirement fight. It turns out it was not. He has said, no, I'm not retiring. I think I still have some left. He does. He's right about that. I just didn't know that that was the objective. I either misunderstood or he changed his mind. Could also be a combination of the two. And I bring that up because when is a perfect time to stop, right? I don't think there is such a thing. Everybody deals with that. Anything you're addicted to or anything that you want to keep doing, but you know you've got to stop. It's not good for you. Something like that. I mean, sports and health and having goals and cutting weight and exercise, these are wonderful things, but I will share with you, they've at least got an expiration date. Can we agree there? So, but if I was to compare it to every alcoholic and every gambler out there, it's always one more drink after this one. It's always one more roll, one more pull of the bar, one more time at the tables, and then I'm done. It always is at some point, the only way to stop is you have to stop. There is no last one next. There's a stop. It has to be. So I think that I thought that Chris wanted to go out on top. Good performance, right match, right audience, right microphone, goodbye, closure. I thought. But he continues to march to the beat of a different drum. We have no choice but to admire that. We have no choice but to be inspired by that. Chris has taught us a lot. I mean, what Chris Weidman just did, just for example, the biggest star in our sport is watching and going, how'd you do that? I'm talking about Conor McGregor coming off of his leg injury. I mean, you look at it and go, how'd you do that? Okay, it is possible. You can do it. Like, these things are inspiring. There's still a piece of me that knows that game is going to be risky and that last drink or that last time at the table is going to come. And it is very unlikely to end with you beating the house, with you going out on top, with you leaving with a positive memory. Now, maybe that's not important to Chris. Right? When I talk about he marches to the beat of his own drum, he is at a wild level of success. He clearly views the world and challenging situations different than most, which is why he's been able to overcome and exceed in ways that others simply could not. So I'm not attempting to second guess him. I just thought the hope that generally doesn't happen was his hope too, which is I can go out on a high note. I thought after his fight in Boston, which was his return fight from the injury, that when Dana said, I hope he doesn't fight anymore, and Chris said, whoa, please, whoa, stop. Don't do that to me. Give me one more. That was about because, let's get my feet back under me here, they're under me, and I can win the next one. That's what I thought it was about, but he either changed his mind or I was wrong in the first place. Did you guys think that too? I thought we were watching his retirement fight. I thought that was made clear. BJ Penn had one and never got to it, but BJ Penn got a hold of Dana and said, hey, well, one more. But he had reasons. He had very meaningful reasons. And regardless of what those were, they still had the same premise as Chris's, which were, so I can go the rest of my life feeling a different way. Okay, great. Makes sense, and Dana's going to do it. But I thought that's what we had here. Now, that's before I even get into the X's and O's of the fight, right? Like, if anybody has had some very strange things happen to him, it's Chris Weidman. You guys might remember the night Chris had us having this great fight with Gegard Mousasi. Gegard was so red hot back then. I mean, Gegard's a handful now, but he was so red hot back then. Top five guy. In fact, he might have been ranked number five exactly. And it was just prior they had changed the rule on what a downed opponent is. Where the hands and the hand, where the hands had to be and the palms. And then was that even going to be recognized in this jurisdiction? I mean, it got to be one of these things. So Weidman ended up getting fouled, or at least under the old rule. But under the new rule, it wasn't quite as clear. So he gave confirmation to a referee that once that confirmation is given, that you can't go back on. And it was given without understanding what the consequence would be. I'm just sharing with you, there's a number of very weird things that have happened in Chris Weidman's fights, and this one is no different. There was an eye poke to his opponent. Now, the opponent says that he's going to appeal that decision. I can all but assure you he will not do that. And I base that on one thing, which is 99% of the time, guys that say they're going to appeal a decision, don't. They just don't. And they either don't know how, they don't want to go through that process, or they speak to some people and they feel that the decision isn't going to be favorable. So why go to the expense and the time and the process? All right, great. But moreover, I think a lot of you believe it should be appealed, believe that it should be reversed. And I think what you're really speaking to is the reaction and consequence you would like to see happen for eye pokes. Because see, the reaction and the consequence of what you'd like to see happen is not what an appeal or even the decision that was made would be based on. It's based on what are the rules now. And I agree. We don't have very many rules. I can remember being very irritated when people tried to take a world championship away from Aljo. He was fouled, his opponent was disqualified, which he should have been. The mechanism in place is the belt changes hands. That is subsequent. That has nothing to do with the referee seeing a foul and calling it a foul. Nothing to do with it. And it only bothered me because our sport's only got a few rules. You can't bite him, you can't kick him when he's down, and you can't touch his eyes. So it's very important that with those few rules, that those are followed. Another side to it, a very reasonable side, which is intent. What if I hit him low or poked him in the eye, but I didn't mean to? I mean, what if it was my finger and they're sitting here still and he comes up with his eyes open and runs into them? I mean, you could see where, okay. As unlikely as that might be, but you would see where there is extenuating circumstance. And those decisions need to be decided by somebody. And per our statutes, that's the referee. So what do you do? And I don't have the answer. This was absolutely an accident. And there was a number of accidents. And they happen all the time. There does seem to me, aside from this fight, just using that as our starting point, there does seem to me, if you poke a guy and it's ruled unintentional, it's still your finger. And there is still a level of responsibility by you for where that finger goes. And if you want to give him a pass on the first one, or you think it legitimately deserves a pass, fine. But is there two mistakes allowed to happen in one night? Is there 3 mistakes allowed to happen in one night? Is there 5 mistakes per the rule? Yes, but should there be? Should we do away with that? First off, I'm not saying you should get a pass on the first one. Everybody gives you a pass on the first one. It's the same thing with grabbing the fence. Go ahead and grab it. Cheat. Do whatever you want. It's largely the same part with low blows. And I get a little confused. I scratch my head. I don't really know why. But if you do it a second time, even if it wasn't meant to be egregious, should we start calling it egregious? I think that that conversation at least should exist. I really do. I feel as though, in our industry, like all, but you have some kind of a standard. So when one referee starts something, then that's just the way it is. And it does seem like referees who really don't want to interfere in a guy's fight, I will hear them say that. I don't want to interfere in the match. I want this to be between them. Well, it's your job to interfere. There's very few rules. Did that guy cheat? You call him for it. I think this is my opinion. I don't look at myself as a prude. I get that this is a contact sport. I was the first to tell you when it was being called barbaric that it is. I was the first to tell you. Yeah, this is definitely barbaric. So move on. I offer no apology. So I don't think of myself as a prude, but I will share with you, regardless of the rule. I mean, let me just give you a different example that you guys have to live your life by, okay? If you're in a car and somebody comes up and hits you, there's an insurance claim. It wasn't your fault, but there's an insurance claim. Your insurance can go up, but it wasn't your fault. Okay, great. A month later, somebody comes and hits you. It wasn't your fault at all. What terrible luck you must have. Now, there's an insurance claim. Your insurance is likely to go up. Now, if you have 3 of those in a 2-year period, the insurance company will drop you. And you'll go, but it wasn't my fault. I didn't do anything wrong. I was like, this is terrible luck. And the insurance company goes, I don't disagree with that. But if you're the kind of person that brings these things or has this kind of luck, I'm not doing business with you. So I'm just sharing with you, like, it wasn't my fault. It's the gloves. It's the this. It's... Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but maybe we should relook at that. Maybe. And maybe there is something to be said for intent. But there are better ways to word it, in my opinion. Look, if my hand goes forward and I'm trying to touch you in the chest, or my hand goes forward and I'm trying to touch you in the head, but it ends up touching you in the eye, that right now would be and could be ruled unintentional. And I believe if it's any action being done with the hand, that we can reword that and that I am in charge for where my finger goes. That's what I believe. Do you want to start calling things accidental knockouts? I throw a fist and it catches you and you go down. But instead of giving me a knock, we call it an accidental knockout because the referee says it didn't look intentional. It was my fist. It was put on his jaw and we're in a fight. I mean, right? It's one of these things where if you're going to take the good, you got to take the bad. And if the first one's going to be a pass, is there even room for a second one? I have gone my entire life from 9 years old to 47 years old, competing every single day with another person in front of me, pushing and pulling, whether it was wrestling, jiu-jitsu, boxing, MMA, whatever. My finger has never touched an eyeball. I don't know what an eyeball feels like. I do not know what it feels like, and I won't know. But there are other people that they get hit in the car and it comes upon them. I'm not necessarily sharing that that is completely your fault, but it would appear that the rule does need to be changed. And to make believe that you can get multiple ones in a match. I saw a wrestling match. If you ever did something that was against the rules, the first one was a warning. That's the way that this was. It was like this until like 1993. And there was a match going on. And it was a college duel. It was in 1988, and it was close, and it was right at the end. And the guy either hit the guy or he kicked the guy. He just came right and kicked him, I can't remember what it was. And they restart the match, and he takes him right down. He comes over to the coach, and the coach says, "What'd you hit him for?" The guy looked at his coach after he took him down and won the match with 11 seconds left. He looked at the coach and said, "First one's free. Why wouldn't I hit him?" But all he said is, "The first one's free." And the coach's like, "Oh yeah, you're right. Yeah, you should have." You should have done what you did. I'm just sharing for you. Like, these things have this miraculous way of going away. As soon as a penalty comes into play, I've heard a number of guys talk about, Justin Gaethje put out, that it's the gloves. The gloves go too straight. There's a way to actually curve the gloves. And if the finger's curved, even as it comes out, it can't poke the eye. That makes a lot of sense. I've heard those things. Like, there's a reason in boxing nobody ever pokes the eye, because right, there's no fingers to poke the eye with. I do get that concept. But as soon as a punishment goes into play, the eyes are going to quit getting poked. Keep that in mind. It's food for thought. Accidents happen, no doubt about it. But we've got three rules. Don't bite him. Don't touch his eyes. Don't kick him when he's down. And when one of those three does get violated, it's different, at least in my opinion. It's different than another infraction. Oh, Sean Strickland likes me. And he trusts me. But he has never listened to me. I mean, I could tell you that. And you know what? He had a different vision. And it's always worked. So, I don't know if I'm due for one. Or if I need to convert. Stand back and say, God, he's got this figured out. I'm not certain. But he caught me off guard. When he came out and he was very bothered by, I guess it's a rumor at this point, of Adesanya versus Du Plessis. I thought it was done. And in my opinion, it's done as soon as they get the call and they both say yes, which I think has happened. So he just said, hey, whoa, wait a minute. That's my fight. I got dibs on Du Plessis. I have always had dibs on Du Plessis. I gave him an opportunity. Now he's got to give me the opportunity. Izzy gave me an opportunity. I offered it to Izzy, which is true. Sean was expecting and down to do the rematch with Izzy. So, at any rate, but Sean went further with it. He didn't just put his name forward, try to stay optimistic and let people know that he wanted it. He didn't just do that. When this rumor came out, Sean has spoken to the effect of, I'm not climbing this ladder again. This is my shot. Give me the shot. Or I'll go try my hand elsewhere and mentioned boxing. So I understand he's not being literal. I understand there's a frustration and it's coming through. It's just not generally what Sean would do. Sean would generally get annoyed with somebody who would do that. Now, I love the passion. I think you guys do too. I love the message. I love the willingness. I love the courage. I mean, that's what got Sean there in the first place. Sean had been knocked out not that long before he gets the call to take on Adesanya. I mean, imagine that. He got knocked out by a guy that got knocked out by the guy that he's going to go take on short notice as the sixth ranked guy, and they hadn't gone any further than five in a meaningful amount of time. I'm just sharing for you. Sean's got courage. Sean's got guts. Sean is willing to do things that other guys are not going to do. That does have a history of being rewarded. I don't know what is going on with Izzy and Du Plessis, and whatever it is, it's not enough to point a finger and try to shame anybody. It's not. But I do know that Izzy and Du Plessis were offered a fight at 300. I don't know who said no. I don't know what happened there. But I do know historically, if guys turn a fight down, it's now that fight doesn't happen. You don't tell us no on a date and then you get the very fight anyway. You just get it at a different date that's better for you. It doesn't work that way. I mean, it just historically doesn't work that way. And it can't. Like, there's certain policies that have got to be in place, and they've got to spread through the industry, spread through the gyms and the managers, and all the boys start talking. And one of them is, when we call you and offer you a fight, your response is yes. It's not a different time or a different day or change this all for me. Which, I mean, shockingly, fighters would say, oh, yeah, I'll do it. Everything's great. Let's just do it. Then they'll suggest a different date. Valentina Shevchenko is doing it right now. She is recording The Ultimate Fighter right now to get a rematch with Grosso that she should not get. I'm glad she's got it. I'm not trying to take it from her. I'm just sharing with you. If you fight somebody twice and you don't beat them either time, you don't get match three. And she's saying she's not going to sign a bout agreement unless they do the thing in neutral territory. I mean, could you even imagine this? One fighter, one fight, one. And do you know what goes into this? to pick a location up and go over to a different country. I mean, could you even imagine what she's asking? But fighters will do this and they'll be very serious. Hey, I love it. I love the whole thing. I can't do it then. Can we do it over here? I've worked with actors before where I was like organizing stuntmen and I'd call them and they need jobs, right? It's hard to get. You're happy when the phone rings. And they've said, yes, they've wanted it, but they were busy that day and wanted to know if we could just film that on Wednesday instead of on Tuesday. It's like, Do you have any idea what goes in? Just permitted production-wise, do you have any idea what goes into having a film day? Or how expensive it would be to redo a day so that you can come in and participate and fall from a building? Like, no, you don't. Or you know what a fool you sound like by even asking. I'm going on a diatribe, but I'm trying to share with you, like, there are certain things that can't happen. They don't historically in our industry. There are policies that get in place, but they're for very good reason. For very, very good reason. So when Sean was sitting back willing to go into 300, finding out that they're trying to do a different fight at 300, he's still trying to go 300. Then when Sean finds out that they're not going to do the fight at 300, whatever's happening isn't coming to, and here I am, I'm willing to go. As a matter of fact, I don't even need a plane ticket. I happen to live here. Let's fight. He would have very good reason for believing that he's going to get the nod. Oh, by the way, even if it doesn't come around that night, the fact that he said yes and someone else said no, if they're going to do it another night, would mean that Sean is going to get the nod on that yes, not the person that said no. Historically speaking, that's gone both ways. But I'm just sharing for you. It seems that Sean had his hopes up. I don't think anybody gave that to him. I don't believe Dana said anything to him. I think that Sean stood back, looked at the Teevleys, knew our industry well enough. I mean, he's got Nick sick. He's walking to the office and talk to Randy. He's got guys that know the business. They very easily could have said, hey, you've done everything right. You're the kind of attitude and guy that's going to get this. So when he finds out through the media that he's not, I mean, right, you could see where some of this anger would come through. But I took the time to explain to you some of those policies and why they're important. Because it's the very reason I would have said, hey, Sean, don't say that. Sean, don't say that. Now, you can't, if a guy's threatening to leave, you can't then acquiesce. It just can't happen. It just can't happen. Just like the example that I just gave you. There are certain things that have to go through our industry and trickle through. But if they're ever done publicly, it becomes a problem where even if your idea is the better idea, something falls through, can't get it done. I can't call you because I can't give the appearance that you're the one steering the ship. And so it just ends up as one of those things that can get a little bit tough. And we've seen that play out. Francis would be a fine example. He went in, he stood his ground, and here's what this is going to have to be. And it's very hard to then do those things. You put me in a very hard position. Now, without that statement, without that poke, without the appearance, might have been able to get it done. So that is the part that concerns me. And sooner or later, they're going to call with an idea for Sean. It's going to be a great idea. Whatever Sean Strickland does next, there's going to be attention. There's going to be media. There's going to be. But I had thought, I even talked to Daniel Cormier about this. I had thought that there might be a potential that Bo Nickel with a win at 300, right? Bo's going to draw into somebody. Somebody gets that opportunity. Recent example, there was a guy out of Arizona with a pretty big mouth but no ranking named Sean O'Malley. And he found himself against a former world champion in Peter Yan. And everybody knew O'Malley was good, but you got to be careful what you ask for. All of a sudden, he's thrown in there where nobody else wants to be. But it worked. And what do you know next? He's ranked number one fighting for world championships. Hasn't been less than main event. Hadn't been less than $1 million payday since. So I think there's opportunity. Bo Nickel is going to draw into somebody, some meaningful name. And I could see where that would be Sean Strickland just because of the willingness and the attitude that Strickland has always displayed. Hey, you want to fight Pierre? Yeah, I'll fight Pierre. Hey, you want to fight Canada? Yep. Hey, you want to fly to a different country and take on Adesanya? Uh-huh. Hey, we go to yet a different country and take on Duplessis. Yep. I mean, it's one of these things. And Daniel told me no. Daniel said, hey, look, I don't think that Sean would want to do that. In fact, he just made a statement that he doesn't want to reclimb the ladder. Beating somebody like Bo, beating that next generation or that younger guy, is the definition of reclimbing the ladder. So I don't know where that's going to go. I just don't know. But I think whatever frustration or whatever, wherever Sean might feel a little bit left out, I think will be repaired real quick when the idea for what is in store for him does come around. It'll be something good. It'll be something fun. There'll be lots of media. But for right now, I'm just sharing with you, for right now, when a statement like that gets made, It's very, very difficult. Very difficult. Because you could be giving the appearance. And in an industry of sport like this, that's a very risky and bad idea to do. Guys, I'm really into things that add more convenience to my life. It's even better when it also comes with safety in a high-quality package. I'm talking about my Eufy Video Lock. I'm still loving this thing. I love this thing so much that I'd like to invest in the company. I am so impressed with this product that I'm willing to back it. And if anyone out there knows how I can do it, please reach out. You gotta check it out for yourself. I'll probably do a quick social post, but for now, just search Eufy Video Lock. Do it online. It's a 3-in-1 smart lock, 2K camera with an audio and doorbell. It's easy to install. It has fingerprint recognition, so I don't even have to remember a code. I can control it all in an app, which again, the convenience is such a big plus for me. We are always on the go, and being able to monitor our home on the road is such a nice option. Not only that, I don't have to rush to the door if the doorbell rings. I can either open the door or ignore whoever's at the door by vetting them through the app. There is no monthly fees for security video storage. The battery is rechargeable, and each charge lasts about 4 months. This Eufy Lock is fantastic, and I highly recommend it. Search Eufy Video Lock online. That's Eufy, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your front door. Guys, outdoor concert and festival season is upon us, and it will be all about the boots. And Tecovas is your one-stop shop for your head-to-toe attire needs. One of my favorite smells is fresh leather on a new pair of boots. Man, there's just something about being able to smell high quality with your own nose. You ever walked into the store? You know exactly what I'm talking about. I was so impressed when I found out all Tecovas boots are made by hand. In a time-honored tradition, my wife, Miss Brittany, recently picked out a new pair for me, and I gotta say, I experienced an instant upgrade in my mood and my style. By the way, I always go with a rounded tip boot, no flat tip. It's more of a classic style. That's personal. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Plus, their direct-to-consumer pricing keeps value on your feet and money in your pocket. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary beverage or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it to the store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas, T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your favorite pair of boots today.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Bo Nickel has gone after Jordan Burroughs. Are you guys up to speed? I mean, this is the hottest Bo I've ever seen. This is the angriest I've ever seen Bo. But when I say hot, I just mean in the context of he's angry. I actually meant it from, it's great. This is good stuff. This is headline and captivating. It was real. It was sincere. Bo was genuinely bothered. He didn't come out and curse. He didn't even come out and threaten Jordan. He's like, come kick his ass. I'm a pro fighter. He didn't do any of these things. He spoke his mind, though, and he was not happy. It was really fantastic. It was very compelling. Adam Fellers and I, we've been going back and forth sharing it with each other. It's called College Thread in my phone, but it's a group text with people I went to college with. We've been sharing this stuff with each other. We've never had a Bo piece that we've done that for. Bo's getting ready to come up on 300. We're all going to be watching 300. I will be at 300 live. Go through my phone. I don't have any texts about Bo fighting at 300. I mean, just for example, when I tell you this was the most interesting thing he's done, but see, that's a great lane. I'm encouraging and pointing this out because Bo has this capability. Oh, by the way, there are opportunities that you have when you are a main card of a pay-per-view. In this case, a main card of 300, there's opportunities that you have. A lot of guys don't know that. They don't do anything with it. Bo might be one of those guys because he didn't have a confidence in or he was not aware of. He's good at it. He's interesting. It's authentic. It's real. It's how he felt. And by the way, when he got angry and called out the untouchable here. See, that's what's interesting. Cage fighter, the dirty, rotten cage fighter. They're all on limits. Jordan Burroughs is off limits. Jordan Burroughs is, he's perfect. He's never done anything wrong. He's an Olympic hero. It happens to be Olympic year. I mean, I'm just sharing for you. So if Bo could, without threatening, without raising his voice, without using profanity, so effectively go after the untouchable, imagine what he could do with a dirty, rotten cage fighter. I mean, I'm just sharing that Bo did not know he had this skill. All right, great. Now, what happened, you might ask? Okay, now when I say Jordan Burroughs is off limits, he truly is. Jordan Burroughs has never done anything wrong. He's never been accused of doing anything wrong. He's been under USADA, right, since 2011. Just for example, when I tell you he's never done anything wrong or even been accused of anything wrong, he's a husband, he's a father, he's a coach, he's a member of the community. He's a recognizable face. You will never be on TMZ. You could Google all you want. You won't have a bad thing ever said about him. He is absolutely disciplined and dedicated. And from the people that know him well, he is also willing to give of his time back to the community, which generally means kids. So now you have parents and alike whose 9 and 10 and 11-year-old son and daughter came in contact with and left a positive experience after having that contact with Jordan Burroughs. It's just one of those things that when Bo went after him, it was very interesting. What is it that Jordan did? Well, Jordan was, and I got to tell you, I hope I'm right. I mean, I was there. It's the NCAA tournament. Jordan was an announcer. I was there. I was about 18 feet from Jordan, who was working with Daniel Cormier. But I couldn't hear it, in fairness. I was there live. I read about, Adam Fellers and I were going back and forth. I feel that I understand, I know what happened, and that's what I'm going to tell you now. Jordan was calling Storocci's match. 174-pound, three-time NCAA champion. He's now a four-time. And Storocci and Jordan are going to be in the same bracket in 3 weeks at State College, which is where Storocci is from. They're going to be in the same bracket and could very well meet up at the Olympic trials. So Jordan and Storocci's got a bad knee. Did I say that? It's very important because Jordan said, you know, hey, Storocci's going to have to wonder if that opponent's going to be targeting the knee. I predict for you his opponent here tonight. It's going to target that knee. I know if I was the opponent, I'd be targeting the knee. Now, that's what he said. And Bo did not like that. Bo thought that was underhanded. Now, whatever side that you fall on that, I will share with you, I was a little bit surprised that Bo thought it was underhanded. I didn't think that was that bad of a thing to say. And Bo actually called him a fake. I might have called him a fraud. He did. He called him a fraud. He did fake and fraud, but fraud's worse, right? This is blasphemy. For Bo Nickel, this is very strong language from Bo Nickel. And I saw it a little bit different. For example, Jordan's the one that told you. He told you I would go after the knee. So I don't believe that then Bo could say, see, he's a fraud. It's like, well, no, he told you. Like, fraud quite literally is to not disclose. It's to be deceptive. It's pretend to do something while actually doing or being something else. Jordan is the one that told you I will assess my opponent. I find a weakness, I go after the weakness. So, but Bo Nickel is very close with Storoce. He believes in him. He's worked with him. It's his teammate, somebody that he cares about. And Bo also had a different level of understanding and appreciation for what that injury that Storoce was pushing through was. But it didn't make Jordan's comment any less honest or even unsportsmanlike or dirty. I didn't feel it was any of those things. I'll give you guys an example. And if you think Chael sucks as an announcer, Chael, you're not a great example. Okay, fair enough. But if you think that about me, then this won't apply to you. But if you think, hey, Chael, you're a good announcer, right? If you enjoy my commentary. And Bo does. For example, Bo's been very complimentary to me. I was there. ESPN had the rights. I was there. So they could, Chael, I grabbed them, and now I'm calling the match. I was where I should have been, which was watching while Jordan and Daniel called the match. Jordan was the right guy. He was better. And Jordan did something called personalize, which is if you're ever seeing something, and you could relate to it, it happened to you, it's an experience you had, something where you can personalize as an announcer that's greatly encouraged. The audience at home, even if it's a 10-second story, but they like it. And for Jordan to foreshadow a potential upcoming match, I mean, I gotta tell you, that was awesome. It's a really awesome thing to do. Jordan was completely right to have made that observation and then said it. And if you wanted to apologize for Jordan, that'd be real easy to do. He's very green. He's got limited experience. He's brought in out of respect to his accomplishments. So if he's live on a microphone and a little nervous like everybody else would be, and something came out of his mouth, and oh my gosh, I wanted to say that twice. No problem, right? I'm just sharing for you, that's not what happened here. That was good. That was really good that Jordan made an observation. I didn't think that it was negative. And I'm only bringing this to you because now we do have a match to look forward to, which is Storoce and Burrows, should we get that match. But we found something else out about Bo, and I'm just hoping that he found it out about himself. Because one thing that wrestlers have a hard time with, and Bo included, is that we're in the entertainment business. Gable Steveson would be a great example, if you guys know that name. Going to be hard for him to come over to the entertainment business. If anyone can do it, it's Gable. I'm sharing with you, it'll be hard because he's going to have to go against a culture. He's going to have to go against some natural built-in beliefs. In wrestling, amateur wrestling, your mouth is shut, and I mean nothing. You say nothing. You shake hands, you walk away. You hide all that emotion. Even if you're excited, even if you're down, whatever, you hide it, you shake it, you walk away. And in the entertainment business, you can't do that. So you will get these guys that come over as amateurs and they believe we're still in a sport and they're chasing, they're working hard, they're sacrificing. It's going to be about sportsmanship and honor, just like it was at 9 years old when we played Little League. And you are in a sport, and there is definitely a truth for that. But you're not in the business of MMA. You're in the entertainment business. And I hope that Bo learned a lesson here, which is if he has an opinion, share it. They don't all have to be good. If you have an energy and it's negative, share it. Even if it's against the untouchable, like Jordan Burrow, share it. It's interesting. Bo did not hurt Jordan here. Bo brought some attention to Jordan. And Bo's got a really big fight coming up, and he's got a great career ahead of him. And I hope he considers doing more things like this and bringing more attention to those events as well. Oh my goodness, guys! Oh, The Rock! Okay. There's a piece, and I'm going to send this to our producer. It's on Instagram, and I'm hoping that it can be inserted in this. I don't know what the rules are on that. I think that becomes public domain and that I'm welcome to it, but I want you to see it. And it's just The Rock with Cody Rhodes.
Clear, now, you guys. Stay down. Fuck that.
Clear, guys.
Fuck that. You shut your mouth. Clear my ass. How did that feel? Did that feel good? What, just because the show's over, that doesn't mean that the shit stops. The Rock doesn't give a fuck. Huh? You should cry. You should cry, boy. Look at that blood. Now, look at this blood. Yes. Yes. What? Show is over and then it stops? Fuck that. Your script? Fuck that.
God. There's a number of extremely fascinating pieces to this. I mean, even if I was to back up 2 years, 2 years ago, Vince McMahon announces that WrestleMania is going to be a two-day event. Now, of all the ideas that Vince has had, in my estimation, that was amongst the worst. And I'm not talking about, you know, the gobbledygooker and suit and things like that. I'm just, from a business standpoint, to believe, I mean, that would be so obviously a cash grab. No business can do that. No business can get away with that. One of your top executives has to be a master of going out and turning people upside down and shaking them till all the money falls out of their pockets while looking as though they're not doing that at all. You have to have that element. So for WWE to believe they could play the same venue 2 days in a row, they could sell an event on pay-per-view. Don't forget, guys, WrestleMania is 6 hours. It's 6 to 6.5 hours. You're talking about 12 to 13 hours and WrestleMania for a large part, right? Broad stroke. Like if you're watching this by yourself, I don't want you to feel like I'm teasing your isolation, but it's a party type event. It is very similar to the Super Bowl. It is generally parties will happen. You will get together. Somebody's bringing the pizza. Somebody's bringing the soda. Let's all meet over here at 3 o'clock. And to believe and to hedge a bet as a billionaire, as Vince McMahon, as a very smart guy, to hedge a bet that you could do that 2 days in a row, you are so blatantly telling the audience that you want their money. And it had never been done in sport. It had never been considered. In football, never even been considered in baseball, never been considered in anything. Not to mention Vince plays 80,000 seat venues at times. Sure enough, he sold them out both nights. He brought the people in, he entertained them for 6 hours. They all go home tired. They got their fill, but it's enough. Thank you and goodbye. There's a reason this is once a year. He sweeps out the building, he empties the trash, he reloads the popcorn, and he brings them in the very next day and does it again. I mean, it was truly an amazing thing. So, The Rock comes out this year, and The Rock was genuinely caught off guard. I mean, this is one of the great entertainers, is one of the great performers. Of my lifetime, The Rock is the coolest guy. That's not a word you get to use very often. You started using that around 7th grade, and you definitely stopped by the time you left high school. Nobody in college, nobody in the military, nobody on the job site, nobody talks about cool, right? Can we agree on that? What's cool? The Rock's cool. He's the coolest guy of my lifetime. I don't know that that's going to be replaced, and he's in a very interesting spot. And he is so wildly beloved, but he's a human being. And this is the part that he would not admit to you. None of them can admit this to you. All of them have a understanding. All of they're just working. It's just business. I'm just here to entertain you, which is a stone cold lie. And I don't know why all of them have to tell the same lie. I don't know. There's always been a proclivity within wrestling for somebody to come out and be the first to do something different. It wouldn't really matter what that was. You'd be the first guy to pull brass knuckles out of your trunks when the ref is looking. It doesn't overly matter what it is. There's a proclivity and people are drawn to it. And it does surprise me that somebody like The Rock, one of these great workers, multi-generation guy, doesn't come out and say that. Hey, I'm a human being. Like, there's no scenario where The Rock returned to wrestling because he needed it. It was not about money. It wasn't because he needed it. But you do to get a certain feel, and that you can't replace. I don't miss fighting from a perspective of I miss punching somebody or I miss being punched. But there is a feel that environment, from the walkouts to the announcements to the fear to the excitement, all of that brings, there's a feel that can't be replaced. And while I might talk about in the media a negotiation or the money or this, or I better get points or I'm not coming. I know inside I am, because I can't buy that anywhere else. So when The Rock came back to professional wrestling, he came back to feel good. He came back for the drug. Yes, there was money, and yes, there was a negotiation, sure. But it's not what made him say yes. He came back for that adoration and the eruption of the crowd, and not just for those nights. The Rock is very good at playing chess. Well, he will take that attention, and he will take that adoration, and he will then spin that into something else. It's very basic, but it takes a level of understanding, and it takes something known as a strategy, which no other wrestler on the card has. There's only been 10 in the history of the industry that come in with a strategy. The Rock happens to be one. So there's a number of reasons, but it is all based around feeling good. Like if you came to him and you had a crystal ball and you could show him, you're going to get this money and you're going to go over here and you're going to go under here and here's going to be the spots and you're going to have to fly out to Cincinnati. Like if you showed him everything and then you also showed him the ingredients of they are going to hate you. You're going to be booed like you have never been booed. Whoa, he'd stop you right there. And there would be no number. Hey, you're going to give me $30 million for this whole thing. Okay, well, now that you know you're going to get booed, I'm going to give you $40. No, there would be no number. 60, 80, 90, there would be no number where he would have agreed. And I tell you that because I think it'd be a good idea if he came out and told you these things. I mean, he would be the first to ever do that. They all pretend it doesn't matter. They all pretend, boos are a heel's cheers. That's how I know I got them. I evoked an emotion. They say the same thing, but it's not true. And The Rock was genuinely thrown off and did not like it when the crowd booed him, when they turned on him, when they let him know, no matter what a star you are, we have something over here. And there's an integrity that gets preserved for the guys that go on the road. And WrestleMania, which is once a year, is preserved for the guys who have paid their dues, not for who is most famous. And this is new by the audience. By the way, the audience has always gone to who's most famous, right? The most famous guys who headlines WrestleMania. That's why The Rock got brought in. It's why you could pay him $30 million and justify it for one night of action, plus the spots, of course, when another guy that was on the road 250 days going to come in just shy of $1 million, but everybody's going to be okay with it. That is what the industry is, so The Rock got caught off guard. And when I tell you he didn't like it, it's so important that you understand that. And it's so important that The Rock, and I'm talking about Dwayne Johnson, not the character, Dwayne Johnson allows you to understand that. If Dwayne Johnson wants to get the credit that he deserves, because see, if this was easy and this was a natural fit and this was just entertainment, that's what our industry does. And sometimes we go here and sometimes we go there. Then you haven't done anything special. You haven't done anything at all. If I go out somewhere and I play handsome and charming, lightning fast and strong and beloved Chael Sonnen, and I'm not acting, that's just who I am. Women love him and the men want to be like him and this guy's got the cool car and he's got the cool shirts. Where did he get that? That's just who I am. I haven't acted anything. I haven't done anything. So it's very important that The Rock be the first wrestler to let you know, no, I don't like that. And no, I didn't come back to get booed at 50 years old. I came back to be loved at 50 years old. I am a narcissist. You helped to make me this way. It was my number one driving fact to make it to the number one spot in Hollywood. I am a narcissist. I appreciate that you like how I look, but I don't. That's why I take the steroids. I'm trying to change these things. It's why I have specialists that do makeup and they do my hair and they put me in these fancy shirts that I tell people are Versace's. I do it because I am insecure. So when I come here and I get a building to love me, it makes me feel wonderful. And I wanted to come back if I known that very building was going to hate me. And once you understand that, then you can understand the mastery that The Rock has pulled off. And just in time, by the way. He has been limping along. And there's something special there, right? This coolest guy in my lifetime. There's something there. There's an attraction there. And The Rock amongst the boys, main event, he's in the right spot. Like everything's there. But then how well are you going to do? How well Connor is still our top draw in our industry. Connor is not going to beat numbers or beat records that are currently set by Connor, right? He is not what he once was, but he's still in front of everybody else. And that's where The Rock is. So, like, there's no insult here. But what I'm sharing for you is he came out this week in this clip, of which I'm hoping is public domain, that my partner Ryan can show to you guys. Wow. Wow. The great heels are the ones that you truly believe. You truly feel a fear. The Undertaker had that. I was 11 years old and I passed The Undertaker. St. Paul, Minnesota, in an airport. And he was in character and did not look. He was zoned out and went this way. And if anybody said ooh or ah, or tried to stop him, he wouldn't do it. You ask him for an autograph, you're a sweet little kid. He'd love to give it, but he'd tell you no. You had a genuine fear. And that's going to be nearly impossible for The Rock to do. Now, I do buy The Rock as a badass. Right? He's got the right height. He's got the football. He's got multi-generations. He's all juiced up. Like, I do buy him as a badass. But to be scared, he's just too cool. He's just too handsome. He's just too funny. His teeth and smile are just too nice. He's on the board of directors. I know too much about him. And he got me real close there. Either way, he cursed. He curses in this clip multiple times. I don't believe he's ever done an R-rated movie. I've never heard him curse that includes within his movies. He went after Mama Rhodes. I don't know anything about Mama Rhodes. I don't know if she's alive. I assume that she's not, but I don't know. So it is a very sensitive, it is a very tough topic, even from an entertainment standpoint. He went after her while he's beating the hell out of Cody, who's bleeding all over the place. He's yelling at the set, the people on camera. Says, I don't care if we're off the air, right? He did it to present it in a way as though this was captured. And even though we knew it was a performance, I'm just sharing for you, it was awesome. It was awesome, and it was not something he wanted to do, and he had to force himself, and he had to get into it, and he had to keep trying, and he finally found his lane days before bell time. And if he will admit to you that the way I just told the story is simply the best way that anybody has told the story that he's ever heard, which is true, every word, if he would do that, that is where he can then take the bow for the master class of character storytelling that The Rock has done for this WrestleMania. I had a family gathering over the weekend, a holiday. My cousin was out, and he's a sophomore. He's doing a great job off at college, and he's going to major in history. He just declared. Excited, and he loves it. He wants to be a teacher, but more on the level of professor. He wants to stay in. He wants to stay in history, maybe even get like a doctorate, go on and college professor, right? Everybody's got a dream, but this is his idea right now. I was just trying to participate. So I'm saying, well, cousin, you must love storytelling then, right? I mean, that's what history is. I thought he knew that. And somewhere, like, I opened his eyes, but that wasn't my intent. I was just trying to make conversation. Like history is just storytelling. There's no way to know what the Romans were doing in the year 1500. Not zero. Zero way. There was no film. There was no picture. There was no paint. There was no witnesses. There was no scribes of it. I mean, it would be impossible. We don't know who shot JFK, and that's on videotape from a few decades back, right? I mean, like, the story of history is just a story that people have agreed to say that happened throughout history. So it's storytelling. You want to be a storyteller. You like a good story, like an interesting story. Not to mention, people know, even of today, history is written by the winners, not by the losers. So when you got the good guys, the bad guys, what happened, how we got there, like, it's just one of these things. If you ever read a business book, guys, they're all the same in that the person that succeeded and is now writing your book was told by everybody it couldn't be done. Nobody believed in him, but he knew. They'll never tell the truth, which is I thought, I suspected, I went to an environment, I'm a gambler, and I went with, I'm a fool. I didn't think this would work, and it turned out it did. All of those are true. The one part that's not true is I knew what everybody didn't. And if I could just, then I would. Every business book written will come from that tone. They will rewrite it. They will remanufacture the past. Okay. So, Rhonda's come out with a book. And in the book, she makes a statement that she had been dealing with concussions. And when I hear that, the very first thing I think is, whoa, what was the first big shot I saw Rhonda take? You know, concussion could come anywhere. Didn't have to. But my thought was, oh, what's the first big shot I saw her take? Must have been that head kick in Australia from Holly Holm. But if you read a little further on, Rhonda talked about, no, I came into the sport with this. I was getting concussed in judo more times than not. So I share that with you because you're trying to figure out what part can I take literal here. And this is scary stuff. Like concussion and concussion protocol. Will Smith, through a movie called Concussion, really helped the world in many ways. I mean, not only was it a great portrayal by Will Smith, not only was it an award-winning movie, but there was a message in there, and it taught a lot of people. And it had to do with a doctor who was learning about concussions and his specific experiment or experience of bringing this information to Roger Goodell and the NFL just prior to Roger Goodell and the NFL blackballing the doctor so that he would not release the information. And I will just tell you, like, that wasn't all that long ago off the top of my head. We're looking around 2006. 2008 is the time in the release of this movie. I'm close, but my point in telling you that is that's not that long ago. I was out of college. I had a teammate, Eric Webb, who was dealing with concussion, but we didn't really know what that meant. I mean, the way of dealing with that is just to have him not practice so there's no live goes and, like, your heads won't butt into each other and just come out for competition. That made perfect sense to everybody. And I finished college only 5 or 6 years before this movie. After this movie, I have a wrestler. I'm now his coach, but I have a wrestler on scholarship at Oregon State. And because diagnosing is so difficult to do with concussion, it is incumbent on the athlete. Do you have a concussion? No. Okay, guess what? Guess what the official answer is? He's not concussed. Do you have a concussion? Yes. Boom, you're concussed. Now, what my athlete did not know is that if you say those words 3 times per the NCAA, you're out for life. And he was on scholarship. I mean, he didn't have a way to go to school if it wasn't through this process, but he said the words 3 times. And that can be very troubling for kids who oftentimes need a day off of practice. I mean, I'm just sharing for you. Oh, God, my older. Like, there's things that happen when a guy needs a day off. So these were some pretty hard-learned lessons. And I didn't know how literal to take this with Rhonda because, I mean, there's a couple of interpretations. Is she just telling a story that we found interesting? Maybe. I thought it was bigger, though. I thought there could be a message, and she was, much like the movie Concussion and the portrayal that Will Smith did, she was trying to help and extend information to others. That is definitely a possibility. It was the possibility that I believed to be accurate. I'll get to why I believed it to be so sincere in a moment, but I am forced to understand that every book written, much like my cousin who's excited about going into history and thinks that he can tell you what the Spaniards were doing on the ship in 1600 when they touched the port. Knock it off. You only know what somebody else told you, right? It's just one of these things. Knowing that every business book written is reworking and manufacturing, no matter the level of integrity that you believe that author has, it's just human nature. And when the specific words more times than not were used, I knew, okay, this isn't literal. Is it meant to be, though? Is it just a broad stroke to a discussion, right? I'm just trying to figure those things out. Like, Rhonda did a great job either way. It's a really good book. It drops tomorrow. I plug the book for you guys. I'm just sharing for you. When we're breaking down this part, how literal do we want to take it? I know it's not when the words say more times than not. That would mean if you went to practice 4 times in a week, over 2 times you were concussed. I mean, that's what more times, right? More than not. So Now that I know that that isn't literal, how much of the rest of it is? And it's just an interesting spot. The reason that I personally thought that it was sincere, and I read a number of things, people giving Rhonda a hard time. A number of things that this was not sincere, or that was a covering for losses and things like this, I didn't believe. And I didn't believe that. And where she does have sincerity with me is, I don't know that she's done. There was just talks and rumors of her fighting at 300. And I think that she was interested, at least in the attention of that. She didn't shoot those down. I think there's a little part of her that has a little glimmer. That's not going to return to the Ultimate Fighting Championship, but I'm sharing with you that dream might still exist within her, whether it's a reality or not. I don't think that she's done wrestling. I thought she said as much. She's going to step away from wrestling for now, and then we'll return. I thought, but the reason that it's taken with such sincerity for me is that is now not an option. If you are having those kinds of concussions and you have now brought that to the attention, much like my athlete in the Division I program, who said three times, I'm concussed, done for life. If you come out and you make that statement, you are done. You are now unlicensable. And if you're having them from judo, which is a lot of times a fall on the mat, in the wrestling world where you're taking bumps, there's not an opportunity to say, well, there's no striking and there's no blows. There's no striking, there's no blows in judo as well. There's no striking, there's no blows in wrestling that my athlete got cut. I'm saying that because I do think that she's sincere. I don't think it's literal. I can assure you it's not literal. There's not more days than not that she was concussed, but I'm telling you, I think that it's sincere. That is very scary stuff. And there's also a side of, oh, wow. Yeah, oh, wow. Who wasn't seeing this? I mean, in the sport of MMA, we are the only sport in the civilized world that government oversees. Are you guys aware of that? Nowhere in the world, aside communist regimes. I mean, when we went in and stopped Saddam under the lie that he had WMDs, but when we went in and stopped Saddam, one of the first things we did is free the Iraqi soccer team. Literally, only communist regimes oversee sport, well, and combat. That's overseen here. So when they hang their hat on fighter safety, when they're taking your 6% and they're doing this whole thing, it's all this big show. But when they justify that to take the tax dollars, which is always fighter safety, how was a fighter so incredibly looked at, so incredibly watched, so incredibly known, passed through? Why would she know that she was concussed, but they didn't? Those are public. Those are public agencies, here and abroad, funded by tax dollars. I mean, I'm sharing that with you because before you go, well, chill, they might have marked that down and HIPAA laws protect it. No, they don't. Not on the in sheet and not on the out sheet. So if coming in to get in the ring to compete, then there was no concussion, or at least none observed. Well, what about on the way out? How would you hide one of those? And I'm not pointing the finger here, but I am a little bit. Maybe I'm just trying to piece in a little bit of controversy, but there is a question there. How weren't those noticed? How do you not see that? They can't both be true. Can't be having concussions that are so simple that I didn't even have to be hit. It could be in judo where I got this jacket. He's pulling my pants. And it's a pretty soft sport done on a mat. All right, how are you getting past those checks day before the fight? Night of the fight, after the contest. I'm just asking the question. But she's not the first to say this. We've heard this from many fighters. But I'll be the first to ask, why is the government, who is taking the 6% and hanging their hat in all 50 states on fighter safety, not the ones that are catching this? All right, guys, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And thanks to everyone who answered my question on Spotify last Friday. I asked you all to give me your prediction for how UFC's middleweight title picture will play out this year. And Rec gave an answer. He said by the end of the year, Chael will be the new title holder. My question back, Rec, what makes this different than any other year? Ponder that one until Friday, everybody. I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.